This is the Merrimack Valley Podcast with Lawrence Eagle Tribune reporter Bill Kirk.
Hi, we welcome back to Eagle Eye on the Merrimack Valley. Bill Kirk from the Lawrence Eagle Tribune and reporter for the paper. Bill, welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Okay. Surprisingly well. Consider we were just talking before we went on air here about how it looks like the apocalypse everywhere with the fires out west, the locusts in Africa, the murder hornets, and COVID. But all in all, really, Bill, here on coastal New England North Shore, we've had a spectacular summer.
Yeah, we really have. I mean, only just started getting a little cold, in the last couple of days. But yeah, I mean, people have been really getting outside and taking advantage of parks and playgrounds once the playgrounds reopen.
Right.
And beaches have been a big issue. I know in Gloucester they had a big problem up there because the beaches were getting overcrowded and there's a lot of parking issues in the city. And so the mayor's clamped down and just said no out of towners. I think that would only last one weekend. But then apparently there were a bunch of kids partying on Wingersheek Beach in their boats, and so they had to clamp down on that as well, just to try to prevent the spread of COVID as much as possible.
We talked with at the mayor's roundtable. I got to meet Mayor Rivera up in Lawrence, and it was interesting to note how the mayors across the North Shore, even though they have different cities, different problems unique to each city, that there is a common thread across each of them. And I think you just mentioned it, Bill, in a way there, in that the mayors are taking the bull by the horn, so to speak, in that they're going with the general recommendations of the governor, but then they're weaving that and they're creating that in their own image, if you will, in terms of what each city needs. And I find that encouraging. I think we've been pretty solid around here.
Yeah, I mean, Methuen recently went up to, what is it, red, I think. There's three different colors. There's red, yellow, and whatever, white, and red being the worst in terms of cases per thousand, I think. Anyway, it seemed, when you talk to the Lawrence mayor about it, his take on it is interesting that the people who live in Lawrence are sort of the workforce of the Merrimack Valley, and they are basically essential workers that work in food establishments, manufacturing facilities, places that really need to keep going, and so they're more exposed to it, which is which is unfortunate. And in Methuen, I'm not sure what the reason for the spike is there. But yeah, I see that one of the things I see that I really think is great is the this outdoor dining thing that people have really taken advantage of in these cities and towns. You drive down Andover's Main Street, and you've never seen more life on that street in years. The outdoor dining has just taken off, and people love it, and they're flocking to it. And it's really it's really nice to see.
Yeah, I think that's pretty true all over the North Shore and Cape Ann. Bill, you've been following a story that's actually huge, and the reason for my call today is that the combined sewer overflow involving the Merrimack River, Lori Trahan leading the charge up there, and this has been an ongoing problem for sure for so many different communities. And let's go. Tell me your angle on this and what you've seen and what you've been reporting on.
Yeah, well, it is an interesting issue. I mean, everybody thought back in the 70s with the Clean Water Act that, the Clean Water Act really did clean up a tremendous, it was just a phenomenal success in the way it cleaned up water pollution. And then there was the Clean Air Act, which cleaned up air pollution. And both of those pieces of legislation were great. But there was this one piece that was left out of it all, and there's this CSO problem. And so every time there's heavy rain, the sewer plants can't accept the rain and the sewage, and so it all sort of combines, which is why it's combined sewer, and then it overflows into the river, into the Merrimack River, or if you're on the coast, it overflows into the ocean. Coastal communities have spent hundreds of millions of dollars fixing this problem to separate these drainage pipes from the sewer pipes. But I think further inland, in cases like Methuen, Lawrence, Andover, they all go to they all send their sewage to the Greater Lawrence Sanitary District, and that which is in North Andover, interestingly enough. Mm-hmm. Although maybe it's in Lawrence. Anyway, I can't remember. So anyway, it all goes, the region's sewage all goes there, and when it rains, it all overflows into the Merrimack. So what happens is you get these tremendous bacterial loads that end up in the river. And what they say is you got to wait 48 hours for it to flush out after the heavy rain. Well, nobody really has paid attention to that until fairly recently. The Merrimack River Watershed Association has been testing more aggressively. The results of their testing I haven't seen. They haven't been released yet, but I'm sure they're going to show that there's higher bacteria levels after the heavy rains. It just seems pretty obvious. Plus, there's physical evidence. People can actually see, you know, gross stuff in the water. So Lori Trahan has been working on this to get federal help because it's just so darn expensive to fix these things. The local municipalities could never come up with the amount of money that's needed to fix this problem. So they have to go with help from the EPA, basically, the Environmental Protection Agency. And the way the EPA rules are currently written is the money that, again, I did a story on this recently, where the money that is doled out by the EPA goes to, the most goes to the states with the highest population. But that doesn't, just to fix this CSO problem, but that doesn't really address the specifics of each state, because the New England states, as I understand it, is that they have these older sewage systems, and the older systems all have these CSOs, and those are the ones that need to get fixed. So, whereas in Florida, which has a higher population, say, than Massachusetts, they don't have this problem like we have it up here. Their systems, their cities are newer, their systems are newer. And for some reason, they don't have the same pollution problem that we have up here. And partly, too, I mean, if you think about it, it goes into the Merrimack River, which is heavily used recreationally. It's also a water source for a lot of communities, and including Andover and I believe Lawrence and Methuen, for that matter. And so you don't want to be spilling this stuff into your water supply either. Which I think is something that differs from places like Florida or other states like along the coast or elsewhere. So she wrote a letter to the EPA, and she and a bunch of other Congress people asking that the formula be changed so it's more based upon a per capita of the problem. The EPA hasn't responded, I don't think, but they're still working on that. And locally, the state delegation led by, the Methuen state rep.
I just looked his name up yesterday and I lost it as well.
It's a woman. I can't remember, anyway, it'll come to me in a second.
Okay.
But she has been leading.
Oh, I got it. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
She's been leading the charge to get the sewer system, the sewer plants, to release information immediately whenever they do have one of these releases. And that information is, and I actually get emails at the Eagle Tribune from these sewer operators saying there was a release today, this is how much went out. Now that kind of information is interesting, but I'm not quite sure what it really means. So if you have a release of, say, you know, X millions or X hundreds of thousands of gallons from a certain pipe somewhere along the river, how does that affect people downstream or in the immediate vicinity? And I think, you know, if you were going to take, you know, an abundance of caution, which is something that they use a lot these days in the COVID realm, but by going by abundance of caution, you would think you would want to tell people don't go in the water and don't go fishing for at least 48 hours. That kind of notification, that's as far as I can tell, that's not getting out. That nobody is. There's no Board of Health that I know of, except actually in Gloucester, where they're pretty good about telling people. But the boards of health should be out there telling people, hey, there was a spill, it went in the water, then they should post it, like they post for clam diggers.
Mm-hmm.
There's a problem with, say, red tide. You know, they put signs up everywhere saying, do not dig the clams right here because of, you know, XYZ red tide problems, or say, you know, runoff from.
Yeah, you would think that would be a natural, you know, to get that kind of warning out. Bill, what's the significance of the New Hampshire Congress people joining in this fight?
Oh, well, yeah, because it's a two-state problem, because the Merrimack River obviously starts up in New Hampshire and flows down into Massachusetts. You know, Manchester, New Hampshire, I guess they had a big spill recently. You know, it goes through Lowell. It goes through some big cities, all of which have these problems. So, and yeah, it does start up in New Hampshire. So you do have two states that are trying to work together to solve this problem, which is good. I mean, they really have to. I'm not sure how successful they're going to be against a Republican administration that generally isn't enforcing very strict environmental rules and regulations. But you know, it all comes down to sort of the process and who has the squeakiest wheel, I guess, is what it comes down to a lot of times.
All right, a couple of other stories quickly here, Bill. You've been following the reopening or the planning of reopening of schools in the area. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's been real up and down. I see places like Andover where teachers they refused to go into the buildings on their first day of professional development. The way that the union, Mass Teachers Association, worked it was they had the sort of first day of school, which was, say, you know, September 1st, and then they bargained somehow, and they got, you know, all the school districts to add basically 10 days of professional development. So there's technically, they're not, you know, there's no students in the school. It's just teachers sort of getting ready. But that first day of professional development in Andover, the teachers refused to go inside. They sat outside on picnic tables. It became very contentious. And the action by the administration was upheld by, I believe, the State Labor Relations Board upheld their side of it and basically told the teachers they had to go into the building. They had to start working. In Methuen, they went back and forth on the reopening. They were going to start a hybrid model in early October, and then there was a big hue and cry, so they pushed it to November, and then there was another big hue and cry, and then, so they pushed it back to October. And right now, as far as I know, they're doing in-person learning for sort of the special needs students that really need that sort of one-on-one, you know, or, you know, close contact with teachers. They're doing the in-person for them, and everybody else is doing online learning. In Methuen, there was a teacher who tested positive for coronavirus during this period of professional development, as they're calling it, and they had to quarantine a bunch of people and you know, do the contact tracing to see who he or she was in contact with. So it's been a rocky start, to say the least. But the contact tracing, as I understand it, is working. It tends to work really well because they can find out exactly. It's like if there is somebody who tests positive, they can find out pretty much exactly, you know, who they've been in contact with and who they might have, infected with the virus. So the testing is key, obviously, as it always has been. In Merrimack College, I don't know if I did a story about this. They have a very aggressive system of testing. They test, I think they test kids every week. They have a quarantine dorm. So if you test positive, you go into the quarantine dorm. They're really, one of these universities is taking it very aggressively. And a lot of kids have stayed home. A lot of kids, because, you know, they have a lot of students. Merrimack has a lot of students from the area, so it's easy for them to stay home. There was a great story, actually, this is a little bit off topic, but there was a great story in the New York Times recently about how college kids, say, from Harvard or MIT or these other schools where it's all online learning, a group of them, because they don't want to live at home, want to do online learning because that's just boring, they'll do an Airbnb rental, and they can rent these houses anywhere in the country, really. One group rented an Airbnb I think they were from Northeastern or Harvard. They rented an Airbnb in Hawaii, and that's where they're living. and they're doing online learning from Hawaii.
Oh, why not?
I thought it was brilliant. Yeah.
Oh man, there's going to be some good stuff come out of this as we go along for sure. And that's one of them. I love that, man. I'm going to Harvard. Yeah. Where are you? Well, I'm on Waikiki. Man.
Yeah, and they're, you know, and you've got to assume that either these kids are pretty, obviously they're bright, but you got to assume they're motivated too. So it's not like they're sloughing off. I mean, they're probably working hard and
oh, no doubt, so. Yeah.
Bill,
finally, you did a story on the Methuen police chief, and it's not about what everybody would be expecting, I guess. Do you want to mention that, comment on that, or let it go?
Yeah, no, it's been a sort of an ongoing saga with the police chief. Primarily over his contract, he's one of the highest paid police chiefs in the country. He makes somewhere between $300,000 and $350,000 a year, and for a relatively small community like Methuen, that's really high. There's been a lot of talk amongst the city council. There's an audit going on right now of the police department. The police superior officers union contract is likewise had really high salaries for their captains, lieutenants and sergeants, and it was linked it was linked somehow to the police chief's salary. So they were on target to make even more than the chief. I mean, some of them were supposedly going to make $400,000 a year, and these are superior officers. So that's been ongoing, and so you have these. And the city council is a relatively new group of councilors. They took a vote. It was eight in favor and one abstained. Of no confidence on the chief. And it's basically, they're complaining about his high salary and his, as well as, some management issues that they find trouble with. The debate was interesting because a lot of some of the counselors were saying, why are we doing this? Why don't we wait till this audit is over? And it's supposed to be done, say, November, I believe. And others said, well, you know, I think basically what they were doing was they were sending a message, probably to the audit team, saying, "Hey, the city council has no faith in this chief. Just so you know what I mean." And they're basically saying, sort of a heads up to the audit team, which is an outside organization, completely independent of the city or the chief or the city council or the mayor, for that matter. Even though the mayor is really in charge of the audit, Mayor Perry. So it's been sort of an ongoing saga, and there's more to come, obviously.
Well, people may have no confidence in me, and they might vote no confidence, but it's not because of my salary. So, I don't have to worry about that. So
yeah, mine either.
Yeah, right. Oh man, what a story. Okay, that's wow. Bill, thank you. I thank you once again. I'm gonna check in with you this time. A little more frequently and a little more often, because it's been way too long, and your stuff is so good. I want people to hear about it and to read about it. And all this is available, of course, the Lawrence Eagle Tribune. And also you can Google, Bill's stories, and, you can get them that way as well. Anything else you want to talk about, Bill?
No, I think, Yeah, I mean, it's a different world we're living in, obviously. I mean, one of the things, there's so many events in the fall. I mean, Andover Day, for example, and that's obviously been canceled. You can't have thousands of people in close proximity on Main Street, which is what Andover Day was. And then, and there's a piece today in the online by Brianna Edelstein about the Greek festival, also in Andover, the St. Constantine and Helen Greek Orthodox Church. They have typically an enormous Greek festival this time of year, and it's very well attended. But this year, they're going to do a drive-through. So, you know, I guess you drive through, get a plate of food, and then just keep moving. You know?
Yeah.
It's nice to keep the tradition alive, though. You know, that's what I think people are trying to do. They're trying to get as close to normal as possible, and you know, everybody sort of feels the same way. But we don't want to meet in big groups and you know, let COVID sort of take control.
No, we're not done yet. Hey, Bill, thank you so much for doing the eagle eye again for us. Great reporting, and we'll talk again soon, but for heaven's sake, stay safe.
Yes, you as well.
All right, Bill, take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That is Bill Kirk, who is the eagle eye on the Merrimack Valley from the Lawrence Eagle Tribune. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.